Good Sunday afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining us for the Sunday Social today. I'm here with Raquel Ramos. She is a PFS prevention specialist for the Tradition on Addiction program from the Cheyenne Arapaho tribes, and you also run the Native Generation Youth Group. How are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine. How are you doing today, Thomas?
I'm doing good. And, you know, we used to be co-workers, and so I know a lot about you. I mean, we were in the same field and that kind of stuff. But I want to get your story for the listeners, for just the background of why you got into prevention and how you ended up in the place that you are right now, and kind of what drives you.
Wow. So how much time do we have?
We got right about 30 minutes.
Okay, so this is going to be short and sweet then. Okay, so right now I actually work with youth, and my whole purpose is to reduce underage drinking and non-medical use of prescription drugs. Now, that may seem like something that somebody just actually starts doing, but there's a lot more to it than just going in and trying to make a difference in the lives of young people. So I kind of came into prevention through the back door. And whenever I say through the back door, is I was one of the kids that were troubled as a young person. However, I've been in recovery for 17 years, and it was a long stride. And being able to teach young people and share something different other than what society as a whole expects from them, especially Native youth, is at times it can be challenging, but whenever you put your youth first and you give them the voice, then that's whenever change starts to happen. We actually use our culture as prevention, and it doesn't matter what tribe it comes from. It's just letting our young people know who they are as Native youth. For myself, I'm half Cuban and I'm half Comanche, and I was born in New York City. So that tells you that I really didn't have a whole lot of culture background or cultural upbringing other than my Spanish side. And so whenever I came to Oklahoma, just like most youth living in a diverse community, I was an outcast. And I was an outcast, this is prior to my my actual using of drugs and alcohol myself. And in that outcast, I never fit in. I didn't fit in with the in-group. I didn't fit in with the nobody, because for one, I'm very boisterous, and most Native women aren't very boisterous. And then at the same time, especially the ones that are my age, which we will not disclose. going to a small town called Caney, Oklahoma, and growing up there, I was the only Native in my class. There were only 16 in my graduating class, so once again, I did not fit in. Mm. And the best place that I was able to fit in was in the party crowd. Now, this like was back in 1902, was in the party crowd. And so I liked it. I liked it because people noticed me. I liked it because it was fun. And I liked it because I had something to do.
Felt like you were a part of something?
Yes, especially in a small rural town.
Yeah.
So with that acceptance came consequences. They came the consequences of, I did graduate from high school. I did play basketball, but I had that deep secret on the weekends. Back then, you know, in a small town, once again, 1902, in a small town, you know, teachers were okay with letting you drink, especially one in particular, which would be the one who would buy our alcohol for us, you know? Yeah. And so she was the cool teacher, you know? But that became accepting, because if somebody's an authority like that and is allowing it and partaking with you, then of course, you know, there was no boundaries and no guidelines.
Makes it normal.
Yeah, yeah. So life goes on, continue on with drinking alcohol, how I started. Moving on into actual doing drugs. And I'd done that for, 20-something years. So it's been so starting to tell my age a little bit.
Yeah,
don't be adding now. So that brought me to where I'm kind of at today, because I know the brokenness. I know the feeling of not being included. I know the feeling of not trusting nor being trusted. I know the feeling of hopelessness. And most of all, I know the feeling of not wanting to be in this world anymore. Years ago, I've considered taking my own life because I thought there was no other way. Recovery at the time did not seem as an option, because once you're in either the alcohol or the drug world, there's like a what would I call it? It's like, who would you talk to if you were to come into recovery?
Yeah, because everybody you know is in those same circles.
Yes, yes. And so, you know, and what other circle is there? You know, surely, and this is what addiction tells you, whether it's drugs or alcohol, surely nobody has a clean and sober life. Nobody. There's absolutely no way that everybody on the face of this earth can live a life that's free of drugs and alcohol, is what my thinking was. And so no matter how hard I tried, I could just never stop. And then finally, something came that made me stop. And I decided at that time, or thought to myself, whenever I very first came into recovery, of why did I not care? Why did I not care? Why did I not care about myself? Why did I not care about life? Why did I not care about other people? Why did I not care what people thought of me? There was no care in the world. Everything evolved around myself. And I had to find out why I did the things I did. Why did I not care? And so with that not caring, today in my personal life, I care so much that I don't care. I don't care what people think of me. I don't care what society thinks my role should be as being in recovery. I care so much that I care about our youth. I care about them not going down that same brokenness that I did. I care about them not becoming incarcerated due to drugs and alcohol. I care so much that I just, once again, don't care. And that's kind of a, you know, I've had trials due to my addiction as far as people categorizing me. But, you know, Thomas, here's the thing. Because I am a felon. And a felony, that's not a that's a colonized word. Yeah. It's a colonized word, you know. It seems like, you know, because I'm native, and it seems like white society will accept you more if you make a change in your life and you're able to turn away from habits and you're able to go back into society and you're able to make a difference in the lives of others. But our native communities are the ones that will hold it over your head. Some, not all, some will,
yeah.
You know. And I think that that's really hard because, you know, it's like, had you rather somebody that has faced the challenges and made a change, you know, show, teach, and lead the way? And I'm not a hypocrite, none whatsoever, you know. Or had you rather have somebody that is completely still in active addiction or active, you know, whatever their addiction is, you know, saying, okay, yeah, here you go. Now, once again, that's not being hypocritical. It's just showing you the balance, you know.
Well, and I think there's even the problem of people that have never been around the culture of drugs and alcohol, you know, being in prevention. I think that's a big part of it, is like, you have to kind of understand what's going on with those people whenever it's going on. You know what I mean? Like, to me, it's almost like a coach in sports. Now, there are some coaches that could never play the game and are going to be just a brilliant mind for it, and they're going to be able to do it. But the majority of coaches out there had actually played in the game, and they understand what it takes to play in the game and, the you know, that kind of stuff. And I think that's the problem with a lot of prevention is that people are just kind of out of touch, you know? I mean, there's people that have been in prevention for 30 years, and so much has changed over those years, and there's so much that they can learn out of a book that some of it is just not going to apply. And I think it's really important that people who are in fields like this have some sort of background, whether it is, you know, personal addiction or a parent or, you know what I mean, whatever it is. I think that's an important part of it. And and I think it's kind of crazy that, you know, certain tribes or entities would hold that kind of against you whenever. Yeah. I mean, that's really what makes a lot of those kids kind of feel comfortable around you, when you can be truthful with them and tell them exactly what's going on. So I understand what you're talking about, because I have seen those hypocrites and the ones that, you know, like I said, aren't really in touch with the youth. And mm-hmm. and I think that's really important. Now, you talked about Tradition Not Addiction, your mm-hmm. employer right now. Can you tell us a little bit about what exactly you guys do, as far as like on a weekly basis or a yearly basis, or how that kind of works?
So I've had the fortunate opportunity with working with Tradition Not Addiction, and every Tuesday I go into two different schools, and I take culture classes into the schools. Right now we're doing moccasin making, and then after that we're going to be doing drumstick making and so on. So we also have a media campaign that has started, or is getting ready to start, actually. And so we have our social media, which is our Facebook page under Tradition Not Addiction. And so if you notice on our Facebook page, it's tailored around the youth. So there's basically only youth pictures that are on there. Of course, we had a GONA training this past week, so, you know, there were adults that were at the GONA training. But other than that training, it's saturated with nothing but our youth, because it's a youth organization, and when you promote youth, empower youth, and you stand in the background, that's what gets the youth's attention. It's not about my face. It's not about anybody else's face as far as an adult goes. It's about our actual youth. And with our media campaign, we showcase the youth in our area. We do posters, and with our posters, we actually put on there the prevention message, whether it's for drugs or alcohol, and we add a picture of somebody within the community, a youth, actually. And so we do this so that our youth will actually read the poster, because if I were to see a poster and it doesn't have anybody on there that's related to me or that I know from the community, I more than likely will not even look at the poster, because it has no significance about my area or what I want to look at. We also do community outreaches as well. In our community outreaches, we do culture classes in the outer areas, as well as within our tribal organization, and basically just trying to keep our youth active. I'm kind of new to the Cheyenne Arapaho tribe, so building those partnerships with the tribes has been really good. People are starting to know me now. They're starting to trust me now, because I think that's really big whenever it comes to Native communities, especially working within tribes, is to build that trust first before you go in and try to promote positive change. One of the things that we have coming up, and it will be in March, we don't have the date completely set yet, is we will have a pre-prom car simulation. And with the car simulation, we'll be inviting different schools, juniors and seniors, to come to the school. And we will have a real live simulated car crash. Of course, the cars will already be wrecked and so forth, but we'll have AirVac there. We'll have OHP there, just different things there to bring awareness prior to prom and prior to graduation of what alcohol, texting and driving, or anything like that can happen during this crucial time that youth will be under more peer pressure to drink alcohol because of this significant event that they're going to be accomplishing.
Yeah, and that's, I think that's really important, is to hit these kind of these times during the year that are I guess more susceptible to drinking, or the culture kind of tells you that that's what you're supposed to do. You know, we just had one just passed just recently. You know, New Year's Eve, and that's one that a lot of people. You kind of feel pressured to drink, like, you know, oh, it's New Year's, have one or whatever. And so what do you guys do around that event or that time of year?
So one of the things that, like I said, once again, I'm kind of new to the tribe, but what I did for, or what we did for the New Year's time is we had a end of year prevention party. And we did it right after Christmas and right before New Year's. And we picked that time because the kids have already, of course, they were looking forward to Christmas. Then there's that big gap of parents working, of being home alone, of friends wanting to hang out. And so we did the party to break that sense of boredom and to also be able to bring awareness to let them know that they were at higher risk, not only of underage drinking, but of prescription drug abuse, because there could possibly be parties within the household. We gave them tips on how to be safe. And the adults that were there, we also gave them tips on how to make sure that they keep track of the alcohol that they purchase if they happen to have alcohol, and if their youth were actually going to a party somewhere else with a friend or to go hang out with others, to make sure that they call those parents to make sure that there would be no alcohol there at the actual party itself, and to see if there would be any adult supervision during the party. And then also being able to let the young people know to be accountable for themselves. And whenever I say that, is for them to actually reach out to their parents or their caregiver during that 2 weeks, you know, during the day, and say, you know, hey, just letting you know that I'm going to so-and-so's house, or that I'm at home and I'm okay, you know. The same thing with prescription drugs, you know. Family gatherings, people coming over for Christmas, right before New Year's as well. Make sure that any prescription drugs are locked up or put away in a safe place if they aren't already locked up. Because we don't know, even if it's family, we don't know what somebody else's situation is. We don't know what they're facing within their lives. And so we don't want to tempt others to open up our medicine cabinet and to be able to see or find medication there, because a lot of people don't count their medications one at a time. So it's real easy for somebody to go in and just take one or two pills, and then that's it. You would never know, other than, oh, I need a refill. You know, I have one or two pills missing, and the doctor will be okay, because, you know, you're at that time to re-prescribe again or refill again.
Now, you said something that was really interesting, and you were talking about breaking the boredom during that break time. Now, that's something that I don't know. I mean, I know it's not just unique to Native communities, but I know that it's something that is very prevalent in Native communities. There's not a lot of community centers, or, you know what I mean, Boys and Girls Clubs, that type of stuff, that is open for kids to go do things. So I know whenever I was in high school, we did all kind of stupid stuff just out of boredom. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, we used to break laws for fun. And, you know, looking back at it now, it's like, man, we were so stupid. But, I mean, it really was just, it was boredom. And so what other ways are you trying to combat that, just that boredom part, that kind of, what's the old saying, the idle hands are the devil's playground.
Right.
And so How is your program trying to battle against that?
Excuse me. So one of the things that we're doing is with Tradition Not Addiction, there's a drum group. And of course, like during the November is Native American month. And so I think that's one of the months that we were able to actually go out into the communities and into different schools and share our culture. The kids were able to do dance performances, and the drum group was able to, you know, sing the opening songs and stuff like that. And so being able to and looking for events, activities as far or conferences or schools that are wanting to see culture, because we don't charge for anything that we do. We just go and we just do it. And the youth are always wanting to and hungry and looking for stuff like that to do, because that's just who they are. That's just what they like to do. And so I try to find different places that we can actually go into. And also, I work really well with the Johnson O'Malley director there at the school, and so we are beginning to partner on a lot of things. I know that doing stuff right after school is a little touchy, because a lot of kids have, you know, basketball practice, baseball practice, football practice, track practice. And so we have decided to go ahead and do something on a Saturday, you know, whether it's one or two Saturdays a month right there in the service area. So that way kids will be able to come. One of the things that we plan on doing is a moccasin class. I know that we have worked on these moccasins once again, since 1902, but we've not completed them yet, but we only have like 30 minutes during the lunch hour to do this. And so it's really hard for them to eat and then have everything set out and then to work on them. You know, it's just not enough time. And so we came up with the idea last week, actually, and we let the kids know that we'll be doing the moccasin class on a Saturday. And they were okay. They were game for that. And so within the classroom, our next project will be making drumsticks. Another thing that will be started there is a youth coalition. And with the youth coalition, one of the things that we plan on doing is becoming not only a part of the Community Anti-Drug Coalitions of America, the CADCA program, but we also plan on being a part of Unity as well. And so those are two of the trips that we plan on taking, especially Unity. I think that it is a very strong program. It is a gathering of Native youth from across the United States that come together on an annual basis and a mid-year basis, and they share their culture with each other. One of the unique things about Unity as well is that the youth teach workshops. And so one of the things that we're going to do with Tradition Not Addiction is we're going to start working on a workshop that our young people will be able to go and teach other Native youth there in Orlando, Florida this year in July. So that's one of our big goals further on down the road.
That's great. And I know that a lot of those kids really look forward to those trips and being able that's one of the things that I really loved about it, was being able to take kids kind of out of their comfort zone. And I think that's a big deal with Native kids in general. It's one of the reasons why we have such a hard time adjusting to life outside of our communities when we do finally live. We're not really taught from a young age how, like, a lot of those social skills, how to meet people. We're taught more how to not trust people. Mm-hmm. And not talk to strangers and not do, you know, it's a whole different way. What kind of struggles or maybe obstacles have you noticed that are unique to dealing with Native kids?
I think that whenever it comes to the trust, I think that was the big one. And I believe that the problem with the trust was just exactly like you said, that it's a learned behavior. And a lot of times it's because some youth are either very shy, they're very insecure, they've not had that voice, you know, because in Native communities as a whole, usually our elders are lifted up and they're respected, and then when they speak, you know, and that just comes with culture and tradition as well. And the young people sit back, and their thing is to sit back and listen. And so for me personally, building that trust with them was to be able to let them know that we're going to do this and do it. It's one thing to let them think we're going to do something and build up all of this emotion and build up all of this, oh, wow, we got this going to happen and this is going to happen, and it never happens. That's whenever you start to lose that communication with them. In the beginning, for example, with the drum group, you know, they didn't know me. And so they were real standoffish. And then I showed them that here's what I want us to do. I want us to go into these schools. And so we had school after school after school lined up, and we had dancers lined up to come dance with us as well. And whenever they actually were able to not just hear it, but actually participate in it, I started getting texts. They started giving me their numbers or messaging me. When are we going to do this again? I really like that. Hey, this is something awesome. And I think that brought that interconnectedness with the adult part and the youth part, saying this isn't just for me, because I can't do it without them. I can't do it without them wanting to do it or showing them and guiding them to do it. They have to have that want to, but it starts off first with trust, you know. And also the things that they want to do, not so much what I want to do, because I know what I have in my mind, but if I don't give them that voice, then we would still be standing right where we're at.
Well, it reminds me of I guess it was kind of a catchphrase or a motto or something that I heard actually at CADCA, where they were talking about the involvement of the youth as far as planning stages and implementation and mm-hmm. just keeping them involved. And they said the phrase to remember is nothing about us without us. And I think that phrase really applies to not just whenever you're doing youth or anything like that, but I mean, it's such a broader concept. I mean, like just voting, for instance, you know, being involved in your tribe's politics, your local politics, politics at the federal level, just to exercise that right that you have, because there's a lot of our people that really don't like to mess with the government at all. They won't vote. They won't get involved because they feel like it doesn't really affect them. And that's something that I think a lot of these tribes and stuff are going to have to start thinking about. And I'd like to know if that's something that you guys would think about, is actually getting kids involved in the politics, getting them to register to vote when they're 18, and getting them to understand what these bills are, and, you know, to make their own informed decision on it. Because one of the things that I truly believe is that if you could get, I mean, half of the eligible Native voters out to vote in local elections, we could swing Oklahoma politics, because yes. There's so many communities like Caddo County and Comanche County and up there in CNA country, you know, all mm-hmm. those counties that where if the Indians just came out and voted, they could change a lot of that stuff. You don't like who the sheriff is? Go vote. You don't like how their politics are? Go vote. And if we could get them out in droves, get a bunch of, I mean, when you look at the numbers, the amount of people that actually do vote in these county elections and these city elections and stuff, you look at it and you could say, man, I could take a busload of 30 people and completely change the outcome of a lot of these questions that are up. And I wonder if that ever comes into mind for prevention, or how you could work that in just to get them more involved and be, because I know what you guys really work on are based on protective factors and risk factors.
Yes.
And can you explain to the listeners just a little bit, while we have a little bit of time, what that kind of means, the protective factors and risk factors? We don't have to get too technical with it, but okay, just the general idea.
So I'm going to touch real quick on the government part of it, on the voting and bringing our youth up to where they could actually have a voice, because it's not just a voice in state and local politics. It's also a voice in tribal politics. Now, I think that if our young people were given the opportunity to have debate teams within the tribe or debate teams within the state, I think that their voice would be not what a lot of our adults would want to hear. Mm-hmm. Because at some point, our youth, they're getting tired of the bickering and tired of, I mean, just like the, for instance, this shutdown that we have right now, you know, that's affecting a lot of IHS employees, you know, that's affecting a lot of federal funding, that's affecting a lot of, you know, and so our young people are like, you know, well, how can you expect them to go work, you know, and not get paid, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But they're not seeing it as a whole. They're seeing it as, oh, hey, I have a basketball game tomorrow. You know, can I have money for the concession? Something really mean. Oh, well, I can't. Why? Because I didn't get paid. Mm-hmm. You know, and so rising up their voice in that aspect, it is really huge. But at the same time, whenever it comes to, I don't know. I just think that politics can be evil.
Yeah.
I think that our young people need to invest their time. However, for me personally, in the work that I do, I don't like bringing politics into the youth organizations. Especially when it comes to tribal, because a lot of times there are young people that come for, and I'm going to use my native generation, for instance, in Lawton. I have youth there from both sides of the political field. And you see their parents and or grandparents and or great-grandparents up here fussing with each other and blah, 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 blah. And I think that if I were to bring that and ask them questions or let them debate it in the within the organization, then that would cause division within, you know. And I try to let them know that, you know, no matter what, always remember these times, because y'all get along together, y'all laugh together, you create together, you go to powwows together, you co-host together, you raise funds together, you know, because we are a nonprofit organization. The people that you see now that are doing all of this fussing and bickering together, they used to be you guys. They used to be friends. They used to laugh together. They grew up together. They played together. And I think that needs to be taught to our adults first before we bring it into the division within our group. So preferably for myself, I prefer not to bring it in, because right now I don't allow politics in our, you know, even if the adults happen to come through the native generation and say, oh, hey, you know, who are you voting for? I'm like, it stops right here.
And I think that's the big thing, is not allowing the divisiveness of politics. I mean,
exactly.
Really.
Exactly. Like, but the knowledge of understanding.
That's the thing that we push, is it's not really as much a certain subject or a certain person or a certain party or whatever. It's just being knowledgeable and being involved.
Yes.
And that doesn't have to be arguing with each other and screaming and all that kind of stuff, because I think that's where politics gets a bad name, is from the bad politics.
Yes.
And you know, politics is what it's really supposed to be, is to represent the people. And so,
yes.
And that's the thing that bothers me, is that it doesn't represent our people.
Yeah.
And so, that's pretty much just the way I feel, I guess, about, you know, the youth and trying to get them involved. Yeah. But real quick, let them know how they can get a hold of you, you know, where they can check out the website and all that kind of stuff.
Okay. So, once again, my name is Raquel Ramos, and you can always get a hold of me at 580-704-2032. I work for the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes with Tradition Not Addiction. And then I also have a nonprofit organization in Lawton, Oklahoma, called Native Generation. And we have Facebook pages for both of the organizations. And so if you want to know anything or any upcoming events, that's our main source of communication, is our Facebook page.
All right. Well, thank you for coming in, Raquel, and we'll be keeping in touch.
Thank you for having me.